Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Monday, August 26th. Currently, we've got 45 degrees here in Old Town Park City. Heber City reporting 46 degrees. On the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Cedric Haynes. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. As you just mentioned there, I'm sure a lot of folks probably walking out the front door this morning, heading off to work and saying, oh my goodness, did we skip over summer straight to winter time with these temperatures down into the 40s? It was definitely a little bit of a crisp fall start out there for sure, and it's going to stay that way as we go throughout the rest of this afternoon. We've got lots of sunshine. Thankfully, we lost those strong winds that we had over the weekend as well, and that's going to allow for that humidity to stay very comfortable, and we're talking high temperatures that are going to struggle to likely get back to 70 degrees in Park City this afternoon. So yeah, it is going to be a very nice day, very pleasant day as you head up towards Park City. If you're in the Heber Valley, hey, we're not going to forget about you as well. How about some nice weather? We may get in the 70s, but that's pretty much about all. Mid to upper 70s is the only warm spot is what we're expecting as we get towards the Heber Valley. So everyone kind of dealing with these well below average temperatures as we kick off this work week. Now, what about your Tuesday? Well, I think it's going to be very similar to today. I think both Park City and the Heber Valley will start off with temperatures in the 40s. I wouldn't be surprised to see an upper 30 or two somewhere surrounding the Heber Valley as we kick off the day. We're going to have more sunshine as we go throughout our Tuesday afternoon. And those temperatures, yeah, they're going to climb. They'll be a little warmer than what we see today. So Tuesday afternoon, high temperatures will likely be in the upper 70s to around 80 in Park City. And that'll get us back into the low to mid 80s in the Heber Valley. But still very pleasant conditions, still very much below average for this time of the year. And going into your Wednesday, we'll tack on a few more degrees to that. So that sunshine, temperatures will be in the upper 70s to around 80 again in Park City, and in the Heber Valley we'll climb into the mid 80s after starting off in the mid 40s on your Wednesday morning. And again, we're going to stick with this nice weather through the work week, so rain chances look very slim to none as we go between now and Friday with lots of sunshine. Temperatures will moderate back into the mid to upper 80s in the Heber Valley and moderate back into the low 80s around Park City, but still very nice, very pleasant through the week. So any outdoor plans this week is going to be looking pretty good. Now, as we move into the weekend, we're not expecting any major changes with the forecast, but we'll introduce a few more clouds. We'll call it partly cloudy in both Park City and the Heber Valley as we get towards your Saturday. And we'll notice those temperatures a little warmer. So we'll be in the low 80s in Park City, probably mid to upper 80s in the Heber Valley. Now, Sunday, we'll have it partly cloudy out there, but I do think there will at least be a very slight chance that we could see an isolated storm or two popping up in the Heber Valley. And that's just basically a chance of some of that monsoon moisture moving back in. But it doesn't look to be nearly as significant as what we've seen the past couple of weeks. And I don't think it'll be as widespread, but can't rule out at least a chance of a pop-up shower. But again, that's going to be on Sunday. Between now and Sunday, lots of sunshine and very pleasant temperatures. So hopefully everyone gets at least a chance to get out and enjoy some of this nice weather.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, stay tuned. Coming up, I'll be checking in with the president of Rootwords Incorporated and Park City resident Charlotte O'Connell. She'll be telling us about the grant she just received to start her new business. This is a learning app to help those who are learning a new vocabulary. Youth Sports Alliance Program Manager Heather Sims and After School Programs Manager Megan Trainer will have details on their new programs now that school has started. And Park City Chamber Bureau CEO Jennifer Wesselhoff with an update on summer lodging and their upcoming annual meeting. Taking a look at some local news now before we get into our interviews. Park City's running of the ball returns September 2nd, this Miners' Day. And as KPCW's Connor Thomas reports, Rotarians will launch balls from a brand new tower.
The Labor, or really Miners' Day, tradition is to race thousands of golf balls down Park City's Main Street as a fundraiser for the local Rotary Club. 15,000 balls are launched from a 15-foot tower for about three blocks. But Rotarian and Summit County Council member Candace Hart says that tower disappeared a few months ago.
A very generous local citizen who allowed us to store the tower on their property subleased part of the property to someone else.
Unknown to the property owner, what they meant was the wooden tower, more than a decade old.
And the person cut it up, destroyed it, and then sold the trailer off.
Rotarians only discovered the tragic loss at the beginning of the summer.
A few choice words were exchanged back and forth amongst us via text as we accepted the reality. But you know, you quickly start to look at it, the glass is half full.
Hart says the old wooden tower was rickety and cramped, and he knew someone who could build it better. The county council had toured the Hoytsville-based custom steel fabricator Riesco in February. Hart reached out and caught them at a good time, in between the usual projects building mining and other equipment. And,
so this here, this is where the chute will kind of slide up to, and then you'll just bolt right through this.
That's engineer Alex McMullen explaining the new and improved tower the Rotarians are calling Tower 2.0.
If we'd have balls kind of trying to pull out and push their way back, we ended up putting these plates on the front. So.
Is that what that's for?
Yep.
They've traded wood for steel, painted brown to resemble a mining tower. It now holds about 25,000 golf balls and fits several people comfortably and safely on its elevated platform.
Not shopping. Yeah, I think they'd be hard-pressed to call it junk, too.
Riesco added Miner's Day touches here and there, like a mine cart and crossed pickaxes. Hart and I visited the Hoytsville Steel Shop Wednesday.
You know, it's kind of cool when I think about you guys making this and it not being mining equipment like you've been working on, but it kind of is. You know, it's playing off the mining heritage, and it's meant to replicate a lot of mining aesthetics. So in a way, it really is right in keeping.
Tower 2.0 will come in at 13 feet 9 inches tall, complete with its own trailer. Hart says it has extra space to feature local businesses and nonprofits if they'd like to sponsor the tower. Rotary may allow different sponsors to pull the steel lever that releases the balls each year, too. You can see Tower 2.0's debut at the Park City Miner's Day celebration Monday, September 2nd, and buy balls online. A link to that is at kpcw.org. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
Park City resident Charlotte O'Connell is the founder and president of RootWords Incorporated, building a vocabulary learning app. She just received a grant from the National Science Foundation that'll be used for research and development on the app. She joins me now on the phone to tell us more. Good morning, Charlotte.
Hi, Leslie. How are you?
Doing well, thank you. So maybe just start by telling us about RootWords. I mean, what is it? Where did this idea come from?
I was setting my timer on my phone, and I realized that it was spinning kind of like a slot machine, and I thought, instead of using the numbers for timing, why don't we use a prefix, a root, a suffix, and build words? So that was where the idea came from. It's hopefully to help people learn vocabulary faster by learning the base roots of Latin or Greek-based words to build words out from the root.
So who would this app be for? I mean, is it somebody like myself who wants to expand her vocabulary, or for somebody just learning the language?
Both, and eventually we'll get that to all different levels. Right now we're focusing on people in the healthcare professions because we think their vocabulary, what they need to learn, is very specific, 95% Latin-based, and will help them learn the vocabularies faster. But eventually we think it will be really good for SAT testers because they'll be able to decode words that they may not know that are longer and more complicated, and we think it will be good for third graders who are just starting to learn how to add prefixes and suffixes. Also for language learners who are maybe Spanish speaking, they'll have cognates that are similar to the Latin roots that English uses. And finally, we're really hoping to expand it out to languages like Arabic, where it's a roots-based language, even though it has a different symbology and works from right to left instead of left to right. That it's still roots-based and should work with that vocabulary too.
So how far along are you on the app? I mean, is it beta mode? Are you testing it?
Thanks for asking. Yeah, we are in beta mode. It has been really difficult to get it coded. It's a really simple idea, but very difficult to get it coded. So we are in beta, and we will be having testing with a researcher to help us prove that it does or doesn't work the way we think it's going to. That's what we'll use the NSF funding to prove it out.
All right. Well, tell us a little bit about that grant. I mean, it did come from the National Science Foundation, as I mentioned, through its America's Seed Fund program. You received almost $273,000. So how will that money be used?
Thanks. We're going to finish developing the app. We know that it works, but it's not very motivational. It doesn't keep people engaged. So we're trying to make, they like to use the word gamification, so people will find it interesting and stay engaged. And we're going to make the vocabulary richer so we can include many of the roots. We are not probably going to be able to get to all of the roots for the healthcare profession, but we'll just keep growing and growing the database, so it really can reach out to different people in different levels.
So why the interest from the Science Foundation? I mean, they're funding something that they don't even know if it's going to work.
Yeah, that's a great question, because I had been applying to the Department of Ed for this, but the Science, NSF, National Science Foundation, has their grants are for research, and what I'm working on is learning cognition. So it fits under that umbrella for them. They don't know that it'll work. It's a really interesting thing about the seed fund is that they don't know that people's ideas will work, but they have a large cadre of people experienced in the different areas. So the woman who is looking at mine is experienced with learning cognition and believes that it could be a way to help people move forward more quickly.
Hmm. So when do you think it'll be finished and, you know, ready for the market?
By January, we will have finished this grant funding, but I'm hoping that by December, we'll have it on the App Store where people could actually use it. Schools could use it if they think it's valuable. Any of the students who are in healthcare professions will be able to buy it. So we'll have it on the App Store and on the Google Play Store.
All right.
Ready for purchase. Yeah.
Okay. And what are you thinking about? I mean, what would something like that cost?
I'd like to keep it in the range of like an SAT test book. So that's like $39 to $49. Some of the other testing materials like GRE and LSAT are more expensive. But I think if we can keep it to that range, and it would be different, like the medical database is different from the fifth grade database, for instance. And so it would be two different purchases and a second language if we get when they would get the Spanish up. That would be a second purchase also. And we're hoping to have a first price, so whatever language you buy it in is the first price of the about $49, and then we'll have a discounted price if people are buying second and third builds.
Sure. So is that a lifetime or annual access?
Annual access.
All right. You are looking for participants, apparently, to do the study. Who would be your ideal participant?
Right now, for the study, it's anyone who's over 18 years old, not in the healthcare professions. And we think that even if somebody is, you know, well-educated, but we'd like, you know, high school and college students, that they would be a good test model, or anybody, actually, anybody who can even read a little English. You could speak Spanish, but read a little bit of English. We're hoping that learning those little parts, just the like meme or gen, if you can put the three or four letters together and understand what they mean, then you'd be able to decode bigger words or build bigger words. So anybody over 18 is welcome in the study.
And apparently they get paid to test the app, up to how much?
Yep, $50 total. And then a year of app usage. So it's $10 when you sign up and take the first test, $10 after the second test, and then $30 at the end of the study.
All right, so how does somebody apply?
info@rootwords.io.
Say that again.
Go to our website. It's info@rootwords.io.
All right. You know, I read that you're trying to determine the effectiveness of learning Greek and Latin root words, and I would think so, but I guess you're wondering if it's even worth teaching it in school like we used to. I don't know that they teach Latin in high school anymore.
Right. It's not really teaching Latin or Greek. I think that is a valuable class to take. But we're hoping that by learning the morphemes, which is the word for the smallest meaningful part of a word, and that's not morpheme, like the drug. But if they learn the morphemes, they'll be able to translate those into other words. So if you know gen is to beget, or patrimony and lineage, then you would know that to generate is to begin building something. And you'll be learning the pre is before. Pre-generate is to make something before. So we're hoping that people will be able to go, oh, I see gen, and that's something to beget or to start, and be able to build words out from there.
Hmm. All right. Your background goes from commercial airline pilot to education app development. That's quite the pivot. How did that come about?
I was an English major in college, and I just want to say how grateful I am for Title IX, because I graduated just after the first class of women graduated from service academies. And because of that, they let women apply for pilot training jobs in the Air Force. And so I became a pilot in the Air Force because that opportunity opened for me and because my parents had made sure that I was ready for anything, and did that, flew for the Air Force for 8 years, and then the airlines, transitioned over to the airlines. And then at the end of that, I liked flying, but there's so much more to do in the world. So I had this idea, as I told you how I came up with that, and thought, this is really what I want to do for the next round.
Okay. All right. Anything else you want to tell us about the app?
Be grateful for anybody who could join us for this research. And I really do hope it helps a lot of people in a lot of different countries to learn English and to learn other languages. And we can communicate better with everybody by knowing better vocabulary amongst all of us.
Okay. Charlotte, I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you, Leslie. Have a great day.
That's Charlotte O'Connell. She's a Park City resident, also the founder and president of RootWords. Again, that information, email can be sent to info@rootwords.io if you're interested in participating in that paid study. Well, the owner of Park City's DoubleTree Hotel is seeking a height exception to build a new mixed-use development. KPCW's Parker Malatesta has the latest on plans for that Park Avenue property.
The plan for the DoubleTree site, formerly known as the Yarrow, includes hotel rooms, condos, affordable housing, and commercial space. The height of the new development, which still needs to be approved by Park City officials, is under 45 feet. However, the area is zoned for a maximum building height of 35 feet. The Park City Planning Commission will meet August 28th to determine if it should allow an exception for the increased height. About 24 people went to the open house Tuesday, where developers argued the benefits of their proposal and why it should be allowed to build above the permitted height. Nearly 40% of the project would be publicly accessible open space. The development would also include a new 12-foot-wide sidewalk along Park Avenue and Kearns Boulevard. Greg, a Park Avenue condos resident who preferred only to share his first name, says the project would be an improvement compared to the existing hotel.
I love it. Yeah, having a condo across the street since 1975, and when they first built this, this was a grand entrance into Park City, but that was 1977, and it's very dated. But this now looks like a great idea, particularly the open space around the outside, and I hope the city goes along with the height easement that they're wanting.
Thanes resident Pam Bloom agrees.
I think it's really exciting, and it's definitely an upgrade to what's here, and I think the city would be kind of silly to stop this kind of building from happening, because I think it's what we all want to see instead of parking lots and cement.
The Park City Planning Commission will meet on the project August 28th at 5:30 at City Hall. The meeting agenda will be available Friday. Parker Malatesta, KPCW News.
8:26, good morning. Well, Park City Minor Days festivities are a week away, and parade applications are due this Thursday. As the longest running event in Park City, the 129-year celebration honors the town's mining legacy and begins with a 5K run and pancake breakfast on Monday, September 2nd. The Park City 5K, a fundraising run organized by Park City Twilight Rotary, a portion of the proceeds benefit local animal rescue organizations. There is no race registration fee, but donations are encouraged. The self-timed race begins at 8 a.m. The fun run is followed by the annual running of the balls. This is a race of up to 25,000 golf balls through a chute that cuts across three blocks of Main Street. Those interested in participating can purchase balls online or on-site ahead of the 10:30 a.m. event. After the running of the balls, local businesses and organizations will take part in the Miners' Day Parade, which features the Park City Rotary Club Citizens of the Year as Grand Marshals, Tracy Meyer and Adam Strong this year, a community fixture since 1896. The parade meanders down Main Street and ends at City Park. Among the highlights are fire trucks, tractors, cheerleaders, bands, and other community organizations. Three awards of $1,000 are up for grabs in the categories of Best Mining Theme, Most Original or Creative, and Best Overall Entry. Political candidates and government entries are able to be in the parade but are not eligible for an award. Parade applications are due this Thursday by 5 p.m. Well, joining me now in the studio from Youth Sports Alliance, I have Youth Programs Director Heather Sins, along with After School Programs Manager Megan Trainer. Good morning, ladies.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So now that school has started there, I'm guessing lots of your programming well, too, Heather?
Yep. Registration is open for first sessions of after school programs. They start on the 9th in Wasatch School District, and on the 13th in Park City School District. We have programs open in South Summit, Wasatch, and Park City, as well as some of the charter schools like Park City Day School, TLS Academy. Homeschoolers are welcome to participate in our programs. And all the programs are online and at ysausa.org. We have two different types of programs. We have Get Out and Play, which is our first through fifth grade. And then we have Activate, which is our sixth through 12th grade.
Okay, so do you have programs now in all Summit Wasatch County schools?
Yep, all the Wasatch back schools, we have programs with 23 schools.
Wow, okay. And do you have enough spots for people who are interested?
So some of the smaller programs do actually sell out. So when you've got 6 to 8 spots, like sailing, for example, so that does sell out. But then we still have big programs that have 50 spots, such as mountain biking and Woodward and some of those other programs that are just, we try to make sure that we have something for everybody, whether it's mountain biking or we have an art class coming up. So we try to make sure that we have something that reaches everyone.
Yeah. Is there a most popular one?
So in the fall and the spring, it's really our mountain biking and Woodward programs. So the Woodward program is indoors, and we split them with, so there's 24 kids do acro and parkour and trampolining, and then 24 kids do the BMX and scootering and skateboarding. So that's always popular. We bus the kids from the schools. But then our mountain biking is probably our second biggest program behind the ski programs.
All right, so tell us, how do people register then? Just ysausa.org?
Yeah, you can go to ysausa.org. All of our programs are divided between our Get Out and Play and our Activate. And then if when you're registering, if you have any questions or if you're looking to join a program and there's no space left, you can always get in touch with us. And we have a wait list going for most programs, just in the case that, a student who's registered can't attend. And so those sometimes open up. So definitely reach out to us, Heather and Megan, and we will make sure that we can try and get your kids involved in some sort of program.
Okay, so what's the cost involved?
It ranges. Each program, it really depends on the venue and what the program is, but we do offer scholarships for every level. And if you go online, you'll see all of our tickets are either a standard ticket or a scholarship ticket. If you have questions about that, please reach out. We want to make sure that we can supply a program for all students if they're interested and all kids. And our students who are eligible for scholarships are usually on the free and reduced lunch program, and they pay a small commitment fee to participate. And so, reach out if you have questions about that, or if you are maybe a homeschool student and you want to get involved, we can definitely help get those kids.
Sure.
Active and in programs.
Yeah, and that makes sense. Just paying, what, $20 or something?
Yes.
Just so that they've put something out, they'll show up.
They'll show up, exactly. Yeah. But it's affordable and accessible.
Yeah, and we do offer a partial scholarship for those families that are earning $120,000 or less.
Okay, a partial meaning?
Usually about 50%. So it depends on the circumstances, but that's usually what it is about 50% off. We found, obviously, living in on the Wasatch back here, it's really expensive to live here. And our least amount of people that are participating are in that they don't qualify for free and reduced lunch and are under $120,000. So a couple of years ago, we started a partial scholarship.
Yeah. You said that the cost of a program depends. So what are we talking about? What's the minimum up to how much?
So so our minimum program cost is $50, and then a scholarship, if you're on the free and reduced lunch, it would be about $15. Our mountain bike program, for example, is $60. And then our most expensive right now is a Woodward program, and that is partly due to the transportation costs on top of that. So we have, our program costs really do vary depending on whether there's transportation or whether there's not transportation, but our programs have not, we've not raised prices in 7 years. So we try to keep it affordable.
And I'm guessing they don't pay for the entire cost of just the instructors and transportation. And
yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm. In terms of, do you give preference to those members of the one of the seven sports clubs that YSA supports?
In
terms of the ice skating, Park City Ski and Snowboard, ice miners.
In terms of scholarships, I'm not.
Just in terms of registration.
Oh, no, anybody can register for the scholarships. The scholarships that are currently, we have open for the Seven Winters Sports Clubs, those are just different from the programs, and that window actually closes on Saturday, August 31st. And athletes that are trained with our Seven Winters Sports Club, that's Figure Skating Club of Park City, Park City Ice Miners Hockey, Park City Speed Skating Club, Park City Ski and Snowboard, Utah Olympic Park Skeleton and Bobsled, Wasatch Freestyle and Wasatch Luge. Families that are facing challenges keeping their children in one of those winter sports clubs are encouraged to apply for those scholarships. Athletes will be required to confidentially submit financial records to YSA's staff bookkeeper and get letters of recommendation for their coaches. So those scholarships are really for kids who really face financial challenges to stay in their club, and maybe they have travel or competitions that they can't afford, and so that's what those scholarships are for. So it's a different path than our program scholarships.
Okay, all right. Again, registration is underway.
Yes.
At this point.
So, yes.
Yeah. If you're interested.
Yes.
Do it now or.
Yes.
Are you selling out?
Yes.
And just with the scholarship, with the Stein Erickson scholarship, you know, for athletes who have gone through the YSA programs and then maybe want to join one of these club programs, and maybe that cost is a barrier for them, really, you know, go online, ysausa.org, and look at the scholarship criteria, because you may think that you might not qualify, but it may be something that can just help those, your kid, your child, get access to a program. Programming or participation that maybe they didn't think that they were eligible for. So it's definitely worth taking a look.
Yep. Okay. Megan, what's the latest with the Jan's Winter Welcome?
We have our 44th Jan's Winter Welcome happening on October 26th at Stein Erickson Lodge. We still have some tickets available. So if you are interested, go to ysausa.org. We have an amazing opportunity drawing package. It's a trip to Belize, which, who doesn't want to win that?
I want to go.
It's a week stay in a new 5-bedroom, 6-bath oceanfront house with a pool. It's a $4,000 flight credit, which I think is amazing. A few nights with a private chef. You get daily housekeeping. You can use it for your family, friends, multiple families, however you want to use it. So opportunity drawing tickets are available online. And last year we helped our partner teams raise $313,000 dollars through our auction items and opportunity drawing tickets, and another $203,940 for need-based training and travel scholarships for athletes training with our YSA partner teams, so those club teams that we just mentioned. So it's a really fun event, and if you're looking to just get involved and support YSA, but also just learn more about what we do, join us. There's tickets available. We'd love to see you.
Okay. Anything else?
So last night we just had our Circle of Excellence, and we inducted Jared Shoemate into our Hall of Fame. He's a Nordic combined athlete. And Tom Kelly was our Spirit of Service award winner. And for more information about registrations or the Belize trip or our scholarships, please go to ysausa.org.
Okay. Heather, Megan, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
Well, the Park City School District has wrapped construction on two projects, but four others are still in the works. KPCW's Christine Muller has this update.
Construction on the preschool and community centers at McPolin and Jeremy Ranch Elementary Schools finished in time to welcome students for the first day of the new school year Tuesday. The district is now focused on completing four other projects at Trailside and Parley's Park Elementaries, Edgar Hill Middle School, and Park City High School. Preschool expansions are underway at Trailside and Parley's Park, similar to those done at McPolin and Jeremy Ranch. Chief Operations Officer Mike Tanner said during the Board of Education meeting Tuesday, they are expected to be completed in the spring of 2025. Edgar Hill Middle School and Park City High School are also expanding in preparation for welcoming students from Treasure Mountain Junior High. Treasure has 8th and 9th grade students, but must be torn down since the building is out of code. Edgar Hill will expand to take in the 8th graders, while the high school will take the 9th graders. The district wants to turn the Kearns campus, where Treasure is, into a sports complex. The Edgar Hill expansion includes two new wings, A and B. Tanner said Wing A was supposed to be finished before students returned for the 2024-25 school year.
99% of the work was complete. What wasn't complete was data wiring, internet access, intercoms, telephone.
Tanner said the area was unsafe for students, so a contingency plan is in place to keep students out of the area. The wing is expected to be finished by August 26th. Construction at Edgar Hill will continue on Wing B and the core of the building until around January 6th. Wing B will likely not be used until the 2025-26 school year, when the 8th grade students will be at the school. Park City High School also saw a push to get construction finished before students arrived this year. Tanner said around 100 workers were there a week before school started, installing carpeting, furniture, and data wiring in the new career and technical education space.
There's still some rough edges that we're working through, but certainly safe and productive and beautiful spaces for our teachers to walk into.
Superintendent Jill Gilday told KPCW Friday the high school has 19 career pathways that will call the CTE space home. Many pathways have special equipment to help students learn, including a medical table to simulate surgeries.
Students can actually manipulate and maneuver specific procedures so they can see what a real surgery might look like, which can really help kids think about, is this a career I'm passionate about?
Construction on the high school is expected to be finished before the 2025-26 school year as well. For a link to find more information about Park City School District construction, visit kpcw.org. Christine Weller, KPCW News.
Well, in the studio with an update from the Park City Chamber Bureau, I have CEO Jennifer Wesselhoff. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Let's start with the lodging data for the summer. How is it looking now that summer is kind of winding up?
Summer is winding down, especially with this beautiful weather this morning. Looking at July, so I have July data through the end of July, and July finished strong in terms of hotel occupancy, which is a really strong indicator for overall spending in the community. July was up about 5% compared to last year, which took us to just under 50% average occupancy. We finished at 47% occupancy, and rates for that time period were also up to about $364, up 5.5%. Really solid numbers for July. Looking forward, August is looking very strong in terms of a booking pace. Right now, our lodgers are telling us that August is up in terms of pace about 3%, and average daily rates are also up about 5%. So far, so good for July and August.
All right, and then what do some of the other economic indexes tell you?
Well, looking back at the last 6 months, we always kind of like to look back and also look forward. Occupancy for the last 6 months overall was up about 3%, and we finished those 6 months at about 44% occupancy. And then average daily rates were up just a little bit, up 1% for that last 6 months. Looking forward for the next 6 months, we're on pace about where we were this time last year, down 0.5. So I think we could probably say we're flat right now for the next 6 months. And rates right now are up about 4% for the next 6 months. Overall, I think we can look at some of the sales tax categories related to tourism. That's, for me, where the rubber really meets the road in terms of how we're performing performing? You know, we look at the lodging data as more of a trend. Are we trending in up or are we trending down in terms of reservations and bookings? When we look at the tax collections for the tourism-related categories for July, now remember those July numbers represent May, so they're always a little bit behind. So May performance, sales tax were up, restaurant taxes were up, recreation, arts and parks taxes, and TRT were all up for performance in May. There are some real anomalies there, and especially because those are generally lower generating tax collections, the increases look really significant. So I think it's better to really look at the 7 months overall for the year. And year to date, when you look at January through July in those tourism related categories, every single tourism related category is up for the year to date number. Sales tax collections for the year are up 5%. Restaurant tax collections up just a little bit over 5%. Recreation, arts and parks taxes up 5%. And transient room taxes are also up 5.5%.
Okay, so that, I mean, it. Is that what you can foresee, though? I mean, things just keep going up, up, up?
I worry a little bit about that if people start to expect up, 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 up all the time. you know, we do expect some leveling off, and we're seeing that with variations in the monthly numbers. You know, when we look at August right now, we're seeing August pace is up 3%, but September pace is down 3%. Now, we're still a couple months out in terms of how that will actually level off. But overall, when you look at the next 6 months, I think we budgeted and we're planning on a pretty flat year just because the last several years have been record-breaking. And I just don't think it's reasonable to expect a double-digit growth or growth year over year every year.
Okay. Coming up Tuesday after Miner's Day, it's your annual meeting. What happens here?
Annual meeting is a great time of year for our members to come together and learn about our accomplishments over the last year, thank our outgoing board members, welcome our new board members, hear from speakers. We'll have Natalie Randall, the Managing Director of the Utah Office of Tourism, with us on hand to talk about the Office of Tourism's plans for the upcoming year related to their Red Emerald strategy and also their plans to help market the state. And then we'll look forward at plans for the upcoming year. And I think generally a highlight of that event is the opportunity to award our prestigious Miles Reiteman Spirit of Hospitality Award for an outstanding community member. Now, I'm not going to tell you, I'm not going to give you a sneak peek of who that is. You'll have to come to the meeting on September 4th.
So give us the details, then there is a cost to this.
There is, and generally the annual meeting is held for members of the organization. We have just over 1,050 members right now, and their employees are welcome to attend. The event is on September 4th. It's a breakfast event this year. Doors will open at 8. The program will begin promptly at 9 a.m. We have a lot to cover. Tickets are currently on sale. You can go to parkcitychamber.com and click on events. You can buy a per-person ticket for just about $55, or you can buy a table.
Okay, is this where you also lay out your marketing plan for the year?
We do, yeah. We'll give folks an update on the summer campaign and some of those performance indicators that I shared with the listeners this morning. And then we'll also talk about our plans for our new Mountain Kind brand, which we launched for summer campaign, but now we get to show what Mountain Kind looks like for the winter campaign and how we plan on incorporating Winter's Favorite Town, which is also a really important part of how we position and market Park City and Summit County.
Well, speaking of kind of that Mountain Kind, I mean, have you had some response to that? Are you seeing favorable?
Yes, it's. I've launched several brands over my career, some more successful than others, and hearing how Mountain Kind resonates with our residents first and foremost is so meaningful to me. Like, we actually created something that our residents feel represents them well, and you know, when you think about how you present yourself in the community, how you promote your community to potential visitors in an authentic way. The way that we created and presented Mountain Kind in a way that really represents and resonates with our locals makes me just so proud. And to be able to see what it looks like in action for the winter is really exciting.
So I've seen mugs and shirts and Loba wear out and about. Is that for sale or is that just, I'm just seeing chamber people?
Yeah, we had a lot of giveaways at our two brand events that we had, one for the community at the visitor center and then a stakeholder event for our members in May. We will be selling merchandise at the visitor center and that is coming soon. We have to do a little bit of remodeling in order to be able to sell merchandise securely there, but there's a lot of opportunities for merchandise and pins and stickers. And stickers are free at the visitor center. Anyone can stop by. We love seeing Mountain Kind in our community. It's really one of the things that we love so much about the brand is because it not only represents us as a community, but also helps us use that messaging to influence visitor behavior when they're in our community, because obviously that's something that's really important to our sustainable tourism plan and to our goals is to mitigate the impacts of tourism on our neighborhoods and our quality of life and our environment. And the idea to be Mountain Kind when you're in our community, taking care of our community, respecting our neighborhoods and our neighbors is something that's really important. So we want to see those stickers out there. If anyone wants one, stop by the visitor center.
Okay. As you mentioned, the annual meeting, you say goodbye to your former board members. You welcome the new people who are just elected. You have, what, a half dozen, it sounds like.
We do. Every year, we have about six people who rotate off the board and six new people that rotate on the board. What makes me really proud of our board election process is that it's an open process, and really anyone who is a member of the organization for at least a year can, who is a full member, can actually apply and be elected. So this year we had several board members rotating off, and I'd like to thank them for their service, including our past chairperson, Brooks Kirschheimer, Shader Elderman, Greg Gendron, Chelsea Steinbach, and Lindsay Arnold. And then we have the opportunity to welcome six newest board members, including Beth Armstrong, Dan Bullard, Chris Lawing with the Pendry, Jocelyn Scudder with Park City Arts and Summit County Arts Council. Gar Trainer with Woodward is joining the board, and Sherry Weaver with Hyatt Centric.
Okay, let's see. You have got a sustainability update. Tell me about this.
We are so excited that we recently received two awards. One is a renewal of our destination marketing accreditation. This is an accreditation that the Chamber and Visitors Bureau has been part of for several years. Every 4 years, we renew it and have to showcase that we're still abiding by the stringent rules and procedures and regulations that Destinations International, the organizing committee, reviews on a four-year basis. So we're really proud of this accreditation. There are less than 200 organizations like ours in the country that receive this accreditation. And it really just shows that we have very rigorous standards related to governance, finance, visitor services, marketing, sales, communications. We have a large checklist that we go through that we show that we have policies and procedures in place for many of these categories. And we're just really proud to showcase that we're one of the elite destination marketing and management organizations in the country.
How difficult is it to be recertified? I know it was a lot of work to get the original certification.
The original certification is a lot more work because in a lot of cases, you're pulling together all of your policies. You're pulling together proof of implementation of those policies and procedures. And in some cases, you're even creating new policies to make sure that you can abide by the accreditation rules. So the renewal is much easier because you already have those policies in place. You're just making sure they're implemented, showcasing that they're being executed.
Yeah, so do they look at whether or not you've been successful with being a sustainable tourism destination?
The destination accreditation is less around performance metrics and really more around policies and procedures related to governance and how we're governed as an organization. The second mountain ideal accreditation, which we also just received, I'm so proud of that. That is really a certification that positions us as one of the most elite destinations related to sustainable tourism. Morgan Mingle, our director of sustainable tourism, works so hard on this Mountain Ideal certification. It's really a rare achievement. There are only three other destinations in the country, and all of them are in Colorado, including Vail, Breckenridge, and Aspen, who currently have this Mountain Ideal certification, which was created by the Green Destinations Organization. And it's really part of our framework related to the development and execution of our sustainable tourism plan. This certification has over 125 specific indicators that we had to showcase that we are working towards. Since this was the first certification that we received, we have a lot more work to do to be able to show performance and key measurements of success. In fact, our office right now is working on a dashboard that will be public facing so that residents and visitors can go to our website and see just how are we performing in many of these key performance metrics. So still a lot of work to do, but I'm just really proud of the work that we've been able to accomplish community-wide, really, for the sustainable tourism plan.
Yeah, so when you look, I mean, only one of 200 tourism organizations worldwide, one of four with that Mountain Ideal certification. I mean, is it a marketing gimmick, or do you really think tourists pay attention to something like that?
I'm not sure if it's a tool to really attract visitors. Quite frankly, that's not really why we do it. It's more important that we know that we're operating at the highest level, particularly because we're receiving public funds and we want to be excellent stewards of those public funds. And we want to also showcase to our community that we're really the best of the best. It's a lot of work. I know there aren't many organizations that go through the accreditation or go through the certification process. And it's because it's hard. It's a lot of work, and you have to have a very, very strong foundation in place to be able to achieve these accreditations and these certifications. And I'm really proud that right here in Summit County and Park City that our organization is one of them.
Okay. You also wanted to quickly highlight presentations tonight, tomorrow, on the economic impact of affordable housing.
We do, yeah. We have a couple of events coming up that I wanted to share with your listeners. Two this week on August 26th at 8 p.m. at the Heber City.
6 to 8, yeah.
I'm sorry, 6 yeah, to 8, yeah. Right.
I just did that story.
Thank you. Thank you. And then tomorrow on the 27th at the Park City Library. This is an opportunity for the Housing Resource Center at Mountainlands Community Housing Trust to present the economic impact of affordable housing along the Wasatch Back. When we survey our members, they tell us that housing and employee housing is one of their most important issues to them. So I think it's an important opportunity for them to hear about housing, the economic impacts of it, and potentially what we can do as a community to support more housing in the area.
All right. I did an interview last Thursday, if people want to listen to that, with the consultant on that. Also, I know something you're looking forward to is headed back to New York City to be part of the James Beard Platform Weekend.
We are so excited to partner with the Park City Restaurant Association for the James Beard Foundation event. We are featuring five restaurants in Park City in New York, including Tupelo, River Horse, Courchevel, the Stein Erickson Lodge, and High West. 16 restaurateurs apply to be part of this event with the Restaurant Association. And it's just such a wonderful opportunity to feature our culinary expertise here in Park City in one of our target markets in New York. And we're just really proud of the chefs who are able to participate in that.
Okay, Jennifer, I got to leave it there. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, Leslie.
Jennifer Wesselhoff, again, CEO of the Park City Chamber of Commerce and Visitors Bureau.